Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Pilgrim Show. This is Nate Moss, the Guru Pilgrim, and we are now on episode number 21 of the Pilgrim Show, and we have an hour and a half ahead of us of interesting conversation. So, the phone number, if you would like to call and be a part of the program, is 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. And once you've dialed in, you can go ahead and press number 1 to indicate that you would like to speak on the air. So what's happening in the world? There's a lot going on, but there's not a lot going on, because a lot of what's going on is the same thing that's been going on for the past 3 weeks. I've noticed this lull. Often news cycles go through these phases where for a week or 2 weeks, there'll be a lot going on. 3 weeks, you know, every day is something new, something big. Everything's a big deal. The next thing you know, there's nothing. It's quiet. And I think we're in one of those lulls. The biggest thing right now is Michael Flynn. So this is really important, because we've known now for a while that Michael Flynn that was unjustly convicted. And we've known that there's a lot of criminality on the other side. We've also known that Barr and Durham have been working on a case. And this reversal of Flynn and total exoneration of Flynn is a really, really big deal, because this opens the door now for what will be a lot more to come down the pike. However, don't expect this to go without some pushback. We're going to see the left implode, and they're going to be completely defeated over the next several months, because we're in an election year. And Trump has been holding some of this back. Barr has been holding some of this back, because there's a dangerous situation in front of us. And here's what I mean by that. If this goes wrong and the left wins, then the people who created this havoc in our country, in the United States, the people who created this huge disparity, this big problem, where we have Antifa and we have Flynn being put in jail, and we have Trump really not getting his agenda for the first year and a half, and people's lives being destroyed, Roger Stone, and the list goes on. Those people who did all of those things, who attempted to nullify an election, it's those people who win. As soon as you give them this, they're, you cannot let them win. This is a war. This is a cold civil war that we're in, and we need to win it, because the consequences are going to be immense if we don't. And so the Michael Flynn issue is a really, really big one, and it's going to be a big deal. And over the next few months, I think what we're going to see is the Barr and his associates are going to come out with some stuff, and people are going to start to get some convictions. And Obama himself is never going to be convicted, but it's going to become obvious what he did. It's going to become obvious what all of those under him did. And as a result, what we're going to see is that We're going to see the total a total chaos on the left in response to this, because they're not just going to roll over and be like, oh, okay, that's fine. And we're already seeing the evidence of this a little bit, because the judge apparently in the Flynn case has delayed. And so even now there's already pushback against this whole situation. So the law is under attack, and that's there's no other way to put it. The law itself is under attack, and that comes from this new age thinking, this idea that it's not the answer that matters, it's how you got there. It's not the correct, it's not correctness or truth don't matter, it's what something means to you that matters. That's the way that the world thinks today. And part of that is that our education, it teaches kids that exactly that way. But you can't blame the education system, because the education system really comes from the same people, basically the people of society are teaching their children in this society. And, you know, there really are a large number of liberals and leftists in this country. And they don't really like conservatism. I don't think that most Democrats recognize just how far that this will take them. But it is a rule of nature that people do not get more conservative over time. That's a simple rule of nature. It's not how it works. People don't get more conservative over time. Now, this applies in many areas of life. This applies in churches. So if you go to a church and they begin with an organ and a piano, and you just sit there long enough and you wait, what you'll see start to happen is that the organ will stop being played, and then it'll be just the piano. And then they might add a guitar. And then later on, they're going to add a drum set. And then they'll drop the piano. And they'll emphasize the percussion, and they'll start to change the songs. Meanwhile, the dress code of the church will change. The idea of bringing your Bible, it becomes less and less important over time. This is what happens. Is there something wrong with it? It's just the natural draw of humanity. We are drawn away from conservative principles. We are drawn away from home, from goodness, from right, from the straight and narrow. We are drawn away from it, just naturally. And this applies. This applies to politics. As a country, if you would show our founders our country today as it is, it would not be a pretty sight. They would be baffled as to how we got here. How did we get here? Of all the things to end up here. This was not how it was designed. This was not how it was laid out. It wasn't meant to be this way. And so when we look at our country and we ask ourselves what's happening, understand that underlying all of it is just this natural tendency of people to move away from conservatism and toward liberalism. Now, the only thing that stops that is thought, thinking, analyzing, being real with yourself, getting to the truth, being willing to be wrong. That's what gets you somewhere. These are traits that we all need to have. We need to be seeking the truth. And sometimes the truth means that I'm wrong. A lot of times it means that I'm wrong. The more you learn about something, the more you realize you don't know about it. The more you learn about yourself, the more you realize you didn't know yourself. And you know, this life is really short. I wasn't sure I was going to go on this rant, but I'm going to go on this rant, because this is personal for me. You know, the Bible talks about a time when people lived 900 years. That'd be nice. There's so much you could get done. You know, if you screw up the first 400 years, you still have a chance. Today, we really get this one chance, this one shot. Life's hard enough just as it is just to get it right. So what are you going to do with it? You got this one chance. What are you going to do with it? You know, you talk about all of these other people out there that are all doing these wrong things, all these things that everybody else is getting wrong. Sometimes we got to look at ourselves. Sometimes we don't have it right. We become something we didn't think we could become. We do things we never thought we would do because we are moving as nature would take us away from what's real. The only way we stop it is by getting back to the truth. Thinking again. So we got to be the best selves that we can be. And I think that part of making a nation, well, what makes a nation is the thoughts, the opinions, and the hearts of the people in it. And so why is there so much disparity in the country of the United States? Why is there so much craziness? Why is there so much chaos? That's because there's so much difference in the thinking of the people here. There are those who really genuinely want to remain true to the founding and to stand for what we stood for as a nation 200 years ago. Yeah, the time is different. Yeah, the politics are different. Yeah, the society is different. The culture is different. But the principles remain the same. We do not want to be oppressed. We want to have freedom. We want to have freedom of religion. We want to have freedom of assembly. We want to have freedom of speech. We want to have freedom of opportunity and the pursuit of happiness. Not the happiness, the pursuit of it. This American exceptionalism, this ideal that we, not as an individual, not because I'm something special to begin with, but because I'm given an opportunity, a chance to be something. Because of this, I can be something. And so because I have this opportunity and this freedom, I'm going to make use of it. And that is American exceptionalism. Not that one person is better than another person, but that we all as Americans together are great. Because each one of us is an individual. Each one of us has personal freedom. Each one of us can be more. Pursuit of more is what we should be most free to do. So what's happening? Who's winning this fight? It's a war. It's a cold war. And right now, it's really kind of in the middle. There's not a defined winner, a defined definite, like this person, this team is winning, that team's losing. It's definitely not there, but I think time will tell. And the next few months are going to be so critical, so important, because here's what's going to happen. Trump is going to start to drop some bombs. You're going to see it over the next few months. We're coming up. We're going to have some October surprises that are going to hit early. We're going to have some October surprises that are going to hit late. And come November, it's going to be a firestorm. There are going to be people that are going to try to prevent certain polling places from having an election, which may be the first of its kind and its scale in the history of this country. There are going to be some leftist governors who are going to allow it. There is going to be near mutiny around this issue. And the attack against this country is not going to end there. There's going to be a lot more that's going to happen in the next few months some of it very devastating. Antifa is not going to stop with this. Black Lives Matter is not going to stop with this. They need more. They're going to get hungrier and hungrier. And the more they destroy and the more they win and the more they get the media's attention, the more motivated they're going to be to continue doing what they're doing. And it's going to get dangerous fast. Because really, this is a lot of this comes back to sports, in that this kneeling thing really comes back to sports. And as I think about sports, I think about it in its historical context. When you think about what it is that a sport is, you had the amphitheaters of the ancients. The Greeks had this great. They were known for their sports, the Olympics, and there were other games that they held, and it was a big deal. Mostly focusing on individual strength, and the amazing things that one person could do, creating heroes out of people. And in many cases, mocking others. And that was sports. And it was this thing that drew crowds and people came and watched other people die. And today we would look at that and we would say, well, that's harsh. What we have today is really quite amazing in the United States. Baseball invented here, built here. Basketball invented here. American football, part of American culture. We in this country invented the many sports that we hold dear. And we renamed the one that the rest of the world plays. And that's sports, and it's something incredible. Something that we did. It's an American accomplishment. Something we should be proud of. Something we should enjoy. And the cool thing about it is that it's some about an individual, but most of these sports deal with teams. They all work around the concept that one person isn't good enough, that it takes more than one person to be good at something, that there's something bigger than ourselves. The American sports represent that better than many other sports. And in tradition in this country, it's been to wave our flag at the beginning of every game, to sing the anthem. What becomes of sports when we can't have fans in the stands and the players on the field kneel for the flag? Now it's political. We're losing our sports, and I'm not sure what's going to come of them. What's going to happen to the NFL when their TV ratings plummet? What's going to happen to baseball when there can't be any fans in the stands? It's kind of a sad commentary of where we've come and what we've done. And it's partly a commentary on what we've allowed. I say we, referring to everyone on this side, but in reality, the people that this really affects, that what I'm talking about is the Republicans themselves. They've long been regarded as weak and never really standing up. They've had this reputation among conservatives for a long time. And I don't know how you fix that without new people, and a lot of them. It takes a lot of people to move in the right direction. The crazy thing is, it's happening on both sides. You see, the millennial generation, brought up as Marxists, really believes that the Democrat Party is not doing what they need to be doing. That the Democrat Party is just in there. They have the same feelings about their Democrat Party that most conservatives have about the Republicans. And there is a movement among the left to put people into place, to start to move things in their favor. And a lot of that is built around the Young Turks. AOC, the Squad, they come out of the Young Turks. They're being effective. They are putting people in place. What are we doing on the right? We have Trump is on the right. Now, there is a movement around that, and I think that there's potential for people to build on that. The problem is Trump is one person. And yeah, sure, you can build on that principle, but to replace him in 2024, you're going to have somebody who is a personality. They need to be themselves. They can't try to run on Trump's coattails because nobody is Trump. They can't try to be Trump. There is no other Trump. Have you ever noticed that impersonators are usually able to do a very good job of many of the presidents, but with Trump, it's almost impossible to personate him well and to come off right? It's because he has got something in his in his demeanor that is irreplicable. There are few in the world in all of time who are truly great. An immense greatness just fills them so that they go on to do amazing, incredible things. There's probably a science behind it, but the biggest names in our country, Washington, Lincoln, no one questions these are great names. Kennedy. I'll go on the other side, Kennedy. And I have respect for Kennedy. Not necessarily for the family, from the things that I've heard. I don't know a lot about it, but it doesn't sound like the family was particularly righteous. But John F. Kennedy had greatness. He had immense greatness. Is at a level of greatness that is hard to express. It's not that he's just a politician. He built an empire, a business empire, and then he went and became the United States president. Not by going into politics. He just jumped in and ran. Something no one had done. It's a singular achievement of immense greatness. So what's going to happen? You have these two sides. And right now they seem to be fighting at neck and neck. And we're going to see. And I think it's the outcome of this coming election, I don't think, is in jeopardy. I think we're going to continue to see some conservatism move while Trump is around. My concern is not 2020. My concern is 2024. What is going to become of this country then? And the next few months might actually help us to see it. Because if the next few months can prove to be a total destruction of the left, which I'm hoping that Barr will help with, could see something pretty incredible. We're going to see. It's going to be interesting. A lot more to come here on the Pilgrim Show. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Hang on.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Join me, Chris Levels, the host of Politics and Prophecy on FreedomizerRadio.com, the show that seeks to educate instead of indoctrinate. enlighten those that seek knowledge and truth while exposing lawlessness and wickedness within our society. Monday through Thursday, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is the time you can join me and my guest on FreedomizerRadio.com.
We are heartfelt.
We speak from the heart.
We are open.
We don't hold back.
We are positivity,
prosperity,
and preparation.
We're endeavoring to empower.
We are hope.
So get off your aspirations and join us on Hope Radio with CC
and Trevor, Tuesdays, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific.
Join the crew.
Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to WeFunder.com/GroundswellCard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Community. What does community mean? Well, there's a lot more to talk about there. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Choppiness on my end. I don't know if you're hearing that or not. That's okay. This is the Pilgrim Show. If you would like to hear the podcast version of the show, you can go to GuruPilgrim.com. We are on Freedomizer Radio Live right now, and you can go to FreedomizerRadio.com to get all the latest and other shows, many other shows on Freedomizer Radio as well. Fun listening. If you'd like to be a part of the program, you can dial 319-527-6208, and we can you press number 1 to indicate that you would like to be a part of the program here. What is community? I want to talk about this because it kind of goes into this a little bit. It kind of expands on my previous rant that in that every society is made up of communities. And the term is evolving, and it's an interesting thing to think about. It used to be that you would be at a place and there would be a community at that place. You would be in a town and there would be a community in that town. If you go to Europe today, you still see this quite a bit. You'll have a small town and people who have lived there their whole lives. And they know everyone else in that town. And when someone moves in from out of town, they could be fully fledged just from the next town over. In Catalonia, what will happen is the people of that town will consider them outsiders. Unless you are born there and raised there and lived there your whole life, you don't belong. You're not part of this town. You're not part of this community. You know, I think there's an interesting thing that has happened in the advent of technology is that the concept of community has morphed drastically. Even in rural United States, small towns, you probably get the picture. People know everybody in the town. These are communities. Today, communities mean a lot more. There are a lot of other things that communities refer to. There are skateboarding communities. There are airplane communities. There are car communities. There are programming communities. There are DevOps communities. There are coffee communities. And the list goes on and on. And, you know, a lot of people are involved in multiple communities. But what happens today now with the advent of technology is that you can be a part of an online community. And so community really just means people with a common denominator, one common denominator. Now, in the coffee world, there's this thing called a coffee culture. And I think that captures better the nuance to some of this. For instance, your local coffee roaster is a particular coffee community. And in that coffee community, you're going to have people who are centered around a particular area and a particular venue. And that is a community. A coffee culture is the broader area and the way that the people in that area interact with their coffee. Every town has these multifaceted community aspects to it. Every area does. You have your culture, and within your culture, you have subcultures. You have these groups over here and these groups over there. And there are communities. And communities are really just groups around something today. You have the public school community. So you have a particular school building, and there is a community around that school building. And people care about that community. When they talk about caring about that community, what they're talking about is the families who go to that school. And so this word really means something very specific. Now, different communities have different advantages, different things. All of us, I think, find, maybe not all of us, maybe I'm just weird. I think we all find ourselves in a leadership in communities. Maybe not. There are people who call themselves community organizers. I get involved in a lot of communities and I tend to lead them. So maybe it is just a me thing. I don't know. But in leading communities, there are many different ways to do it. There are many different kinds of communities and many different philosophies of community. And part of it's going to depend on the culture of the topic. So in the guitar culture, there's a certain kind of person, certain kind of dedication to the guitar and to music. And a lot of these people just won't put their guitar down. So you can really set up and say, you know what, let's have a jam. We'll just play. And we'll just switch guitars around. And understanding that community will help you to sort of determine the best way to put that community together. If you're going to have, you know, a group, or if you're going to try to reach them, or if you're going to try to, you know, you want to sell guitars, you're going to have to understand the people in your area. Some things are just a given, but other things you're going to have to find out more about the people that you're targeting for your community. There's a new kind of community around technology, and that's these open source communities. And what's an open source community? Well, first of all, what's open source? If you've never heard the term, probably you have. Open source refers to software that is open or free to view and edit you on your own. So these open source communities, I've gone into this many different times on the show here, so I don't think I need to go into depth on that. But there's something fundamental about open source communities that's interesting. Philosophy that what I build doesn't just belong to me. What if we had that attitude in other areas of life? What if we took this concept of open source and we applied it to all of our communities? So I pick up a guitar and I start to play it. If I come up with a new riff, do I own it? Is that riff now mine? Am I the exclusive owner of that riff? And now you had better not use that riff without paying me some money. There's an attitude that comes along with that, right? What if, now this is kind of a really interesting view of perspective on this. There is a couple of guys who did an experiment and took a computer and generated every possible melody that you could basically come up with. They found a range of, like, these are the melodies that could be made. And they generated them all and stored them all on a hard drive. And they went to copyright them. And so they copyrighted those. They own the copyright to every melody that you can create. Now, what they were doing is they were really pointing out that you make a song and you should be free to make a song. And there are only so many combinations. And now you're going to start running into issues where if you make a song, the chances are that it's going to run into another song that was out there. You're really just using the same notes as another song almost no matter what you do, because we've had so many songs and there are so many notes and that's all there's to it. Well, if we cared a little bit more and we just said, you know what, I'm gonna take this recording, even saying, you know what, this particular recording I'm gonna worry about, but I'm not gonna worry about the song itself. You can play the song. I'm not going to worry about it. Think about the Happy Birthday song. How much controversy is that? Somebody decides to file a copyright or patent on the Happy Birthday song. So now anytime that the Happy Birthday song is played, it has to be, they get royalties. That's just, it's just ridiculous. So now if you're going to do it, you have to find out who owns the song and all. It's ridiculous. That gets amplified when you have churchgoers writing music for the church. And that bothers me actually quite a bit, because how do you, you're writing music, is it really, you're supposed to be writing this music for God. Are you really writing it for God? If you're going to say that you need to be paid for it? So this idea of copywriting songs, there's a method for that now. It's called copyleft. Copyleft, or you can get Creative Commons Zero on your song. There's lots of there's options. They're free options. You can get it so that nobody can rip you off of your song, but you make it available. I think you make it available. Many other areas of life might be a little bit better if we had this kind of going for us. That's community. That's what it's about. You know, lately I've been doing a lot of Blender stuff. Blender is a 3D application. You can make 3D things. It's open source, of course. And it's equivalent to 3ds Max, Maya, maybe not quite. I mean, it's not equivalent to Maya, but it's got a lot of stuff that you can do with it. You can do video editing. You can do compositing. And, of course, 3D modeling and rendering. And animation, rigging, sculpting, texturing, painting. And it does a tremendous job of a lot of things. You can make game assets. You can make whatever you want to make. You can make in Blender. And it's open source, so you don't pay for it. So it's even better. What's cool about Blender is that 2.8 came out this year. Was it this year? It was like 2.8 came out last year, last fall, officially. And they've been releasing point releases. They might as well have said this was Blender 3, because 2.7 and older just is not, is a completely different animal. It's not anywhere nearly as easy to use. And so 2.8 is like a new world. It's like a whole new world. Now, that happened because of the community. The Blender community was stuck in a paradigm. Basically, the way a lot of these things work, you have a small group of people, maybe one person, who has an idea and a drive and decides to start to build something. Blender was no different. Blender was exactly like that. And, you know, the small group of people, they start to build Blender, and that community expands and more people start to pick it up and go. And there's a way of thinking around that community of Blender. And the way of thinking is, we want these things to be efficient. We have certain things that we're doing. We're going to do it, and we think this is the right way. So we're just going to build our application for us, which is how a lot of open source stuff works. There were a couple of caveats to the way that they thought. They had some really good ideas. They were genius in some really key ways. And Blender would not exist in its form in 2.8 anywhere close to what it is today without these brilliant genius ideas. The interface itself, just the way panels and groupings work, and the way it's pretty rock solid, pretty incredible stuff. But there were some things that they didn't have right. For instance, if you wanted to select something, they figured it would make more sense to right-click to select. And their reasoning was that the things, the actions that you do more often are these other kinds of actions, and so we want to use the left button to do these more frequent clicks. When you really know what you're doing, you don't need to select as often. So we're going to leave select as right-click. The only problem is every single other application in the universe uses a left click to select. So this would be different, which would mean a learning curve, an unnecessary learning curve, because it's just you're changing a key mapping. That, among many other little nuanced things like that, it stayed for a very long time, all the way up through 2.7. It stayed. Right click was official. That was it. Right click to select was the default. And tutorials were made. This is just how people worked. It was like, this is how you do it in Blender. And a lot of this was cumbersome. A lot of it became completely cumbersome, difficult to use because of other similar issues. One of those was that they didn't have an undo function. In the early versions of Blender, there was no undo. If you screwed up, you need to go back and fix it. There was no, why do you need undo history? That's cheating. That was literally their thinking. So yeah, they're genius ideas, but they had these challenges that made it really kind of tricky for them. So along comes this man called the Blender Guru. He calls himself the Blender Guru. Brilliant guy. Makes tutorial videos on Blender. Spends a number of years doing that. Writes a book. Makes more money. And then starts building assets and creates a show. Creates a tutorial series on the Nature Academy. Doesn't exist anymore, by the way. That was back in 2011 or something. And he creates this Nature Academy and all these things. He's making his money and his living around Blender. And doing pretty well for himself, by the way. Moves to Eastern Asia, I think Korea, kind of lives the life he wants to live, you know. And Blender gets him there. Then he starts a podcast. Dangerous thing to do, right? He starts a podcast. First few episodes of the podcast going well. Hey, you know, this is great stuff. The thing is with podcasts is that you have to think. And the Blender Guru started to think. Really fascinating story, actually. And as he thought about what he was doing and prepared for his podcasts, he gets to, I think, what was it, episode number 8, something like that, which is like the turning point. The first, if you get through the first 7 episodes of a podcast, it's going to be successful. The chances of success are like through the roof, something like that. So he gets to episode number 8, and he says, so I've been thinking. And I realize now that every single tutorial that I've had to create, I've had to say, right-click to select. And as he thought more about this, he thought about the other parts of the application. He thought about, well, what about this button? Why is this over here? Why is that over there? And he started to pick apart the interface because he realized that the things that he had to keep saying over and over and over again in all of his tutorials that nobody was going to understand were just interface changes. These were things that were relatively simple to do, but they've just been ingrained into the community, into the Blender community for so long, there was literally no way for them to move. They hadn't changed it. They just said, "Leave. This is the way it is. You're going to come to Blender. You're going to come our way. You're going to do it our way. You're going to be here in our community. You're going to do it this way." It's pretty incredible. He began in his rant, created a firestorm out of episode 8 or whatever it was. I think it was 8. And the Blender community exploded. You had people saying, this is ridiculous. This is a Blender interface. It's this way for a reason. You don't know what you're talking about. And other people within the Blender community were agreeing with them, going, hey, this guy's right. we have needed major interface changes for a long, long time. And the Blender guru, who built a lot, drew a lot of people into the Blender community and really built a large portion of the user base, throws it all back, throws away his entire life work, basically, and says, here, I think it needs to be like this. I think it's all wrong. And, you know, it took some weeks, and he put some more episodes out and talked to people, and he was on forums, and he was digging and talking and chatting, and finally they were able to put together a plan. And the leadership of the Blender community conceded that the best thing to do was to really think hard about what it is that makes a good user interface. How do you get somebody who comes into Blender get up and use it? And ultimately, in the long term, that's going to help the project. And they built this plan, and 2.8 was the culmination of that plan. A massive, massive event in the 3D world. And that's what a community can do. That's what can happen when a community comes together and there are communities that each one of us are involved in. You're involved in a community or five or whatever, however many you're in. I'm in many communities myself. And when we think about those things, we care about people generally. That's what a community is. It's all about the people. And if you want to accomplish something in that community, you have to do it in the right way. And the Blender Guru is a great example of doing it in the right way. Applying things to the real world, bringing the truth into focus, landing that, and even maybe pushing back. We did something that mattered. It was pretty cool. So think about it. In the communities that you're in, we're coming out of COVID. This is a massive opportunity for all of us. We're going to be able to do things that we've never done before because people are thinking about things in a way they've never thought about them before. And this is our chance. Let's make the best of it. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's the Pilgrim Show.
Join me, Chris Levels, the host of Politics and Prophecy on FreedomizerRadio.com, the show that seeks to educate instead of indoctrinate. Enlighten those that seek knowledge and truth while exposing lawlessness and wickedness within our society. Monday through Thursday, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is the time you can join me and my guest on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty's Gardens.com. Now, this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits, like eating wholesome foods, and with tower gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So, Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
Hi, join us Mondays, broadcasting from the City of Love, Loveland, Colorado, where you'll have some fun with me and all the gang as we're learning from each other while we do our thing.
Wait, is that Bill Cosby? You can't be quoting Bill Cosby.
And why not?
Because you don't want to promote Cosby stuff.
Yeah, I thought we were promoting our show, Mental Acumen.
Yeah, but not with Cosby quotes.
Okay. Anyway, going to have a good time.
Stop. That's enough. Join us Monday evenings at 5:30 Mountain Standard Time here on Freedomizer Radio with Donald and Christy Rose as we discuss health, wellness, and mental health in an ever-changing world.
Hey everyone, come check out the Proof Negative Radio Show here on FreedomizerRadio.com Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the Pacific Coast as we fight the New World Order and rock the health freedom world together.
Hello, my name is Christy Rose, and I'm the co-host of Mental Acumen here on Freedomizer Radio. I was trained as a health coach at the world's largest nutrition school, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. I want to support you on your journey to a healthy mind-body connection. I believe the healthcare system is broken, and we need to play an active role in improving our health. We need to take a proactive approach to wellness. If you've struggled to lose weight or to maintain your weight, please consider reaching out to me because I was trained to look at people as individuals and to address the whole body and mind at once. Our bodies are more intelligent than our minds, and they try to scream for help in ways such as depression, acne, and fatigue. I can help you using natural holistic methods to get to the root issues and decrease or eliminate symptoms. I offer a free initial health history consultation, so please visit my website for more information or to schedule an appointment at coachchristie.com. That's coachchristie.com.
Show notes this time. This is the Pilgrim Show. I am Nate Moss, your host. And we're here at Freedomizer Radio. Phone number is 319-527-6208. And press number 1 if you'd like to talk. We have just a little bit of time left, maybe 20 minutes at the most, left in this segment in the podcast and the radio show here. Internet radio. And I want to talk about another kind of community. And this is the continuum. It's time for the continuum. We'll talk about this. So what I do is each week I talk about one of my interests. I have too many interests to be considered sane. And so what I like to do is just talk about each of these things and why it matters to me so much. And people talk about a passion. And my passion is having passions, I guess. And this is it. This is what the one thing that I love is to do everything, which means that there are a lot of things that I'm not great at. That's fine. I'm okay with that. I like to be me. I like to do all these things. It's an incredible journey. And so anyway, this continuum of interests that I have, I've outlined at GuruPilgrim.com on the About page. And the one for today, we've kind of been going around the loop, and the last one was programming last week. And what I want to talk about today continues along this path, this continuum, and the concept is web development. Let's talk about community. Web development is a labyrinth. It's fascinating because it is, to everyone who's involved in it, it is what they make it. it's this really bizarre area of the world where anybody and their brother can build a website. And yet there are really great websites and there are really poor websites. There are companies who build their image around being able to create incredible websites. And there are kids in their parents' basement who can build better ones. There are companies who dedicate 10 or more people to a website. This is your job is to maintain the website. And that's another thing. There's this concept of maintaining the website. So you develop a website, and usually you do it in such a way that you can modify it, and then you maintain it. And that's going to involve everything from updates to security to enhancements to changes. So that's what it's become. But it's a really interesting world. And you know, I think what's going to happen, and it's already happening, it's already becoming pretty obvious, but, well, two things are happening. Number one, it's becoming more complex. And by more complex, I mean insanely complex. Now we don't just have JavaScript. I'm telling you, I was out of web dev entirely for like a year and a half. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that long. Everything I knew, not everything, but it felt like everything I knew went out the window because CSS went from 2 to 3 in the time that I was out. Can you imagine leaving web development at CSS 2 and coming back at it at CSS 3? It's not a pretty picture. Anyway, it changes so, so fast. And you have the whole JavaScript world where in JavaScript, which is what makes parts of web pages move and change colors, and when you click things, then other things happen, and it's like it's the code that runs underneath of your website. And in the JavaScript world, there have been frameworks, this idea that you don't have to develop all of the parts of your website. You just develop one little part. You use somebody else's work to do all the grunt work, and then you could use this framework. That exploded because now there are countless frameworks, and how do you know which one you need to do? And each one has a learning curve of its own. So if you're building a particular website, you might want to use a framework or you might not, or you might want this other framework that you didn't know about, and then do you spend the time learning the framework so that you can build the website, or do you not spend the time learning and you just build it in plain JavaScript? So that happens. Now, there are people who are building websites with plain JavaScript. That's pretty cool. But there's another thing that's happening, and that is, I didn't fully explain that first thing. Let me make a note to come back to that. Come back to the first point. What was my first point? Complexity. I'm going to come back to this. Don't worry. The second thing that's happening is that it's getting easier. And what I mean by that is there's this thing called Squarespace, and there's this other thing called WordPress. And most people don't have to pay a web designer anymore because there are tools now to build your own website. Who needs to pay a web designer when I can use a template and make my own colors and my own logo? I don't need to worry about all of that. I can just do it. So if I can do the whole website all by myself, then what difference does it make? I'll just do it. So all of this complexity, and then the fact that most people don't even need any help, makes for a really, really fascinating world. There certainly was a bubble around the internet when the internet picked up. I think there was an equal bubble around web development. And the thing was that it got crazy. It was insanely cutthroat for a period of time. And you got into web development because you thought you were going to be good at it. Anybody could do it. It was really simple because really all it consisted of was HTML, which was your content. You could just plug in these codes and this was your content, and then CSS. And that was it. You had your content, you had your styles in CSS. And then that was the internet. And so anybody could do that. It was really simple. But there were people who couldn't. So if you were a business owner, you needed a website, you needed to pay somebody to do it because you weren't going to figure out HTML and CSS. So there were some hot shots, you know, down the street who thought, oh, yeah, I got this idea. I could be a web developer. And they would get paid, but they knew nothing about it. And so it became like what Marketplace is today, but for the internet. Just that anybody random could just do what they want. And yeah, pretty crazy. It's like going to Craigslist to get your website built. The more complexity came into it, the more things sort of evolved. And now I think we're probably in a place where there's not a lot of those hotshots who really think they know it all in web development. Hopefully not. I mean, if you think you know it all with web development, you got another thing coming. I'll start throwing some books at you. How's that? So there's some other interesting developments. Oh, the complexity thing. Did I come back to the complexity thing? Did I cover that well enough? That basically it's impossible. If you don't know, so for that little guy in his parents' basement, if you don't have a handle on this stuff, if you don't study it, if you don't dig, if you don't care, you're not going to make it very far. So that combined with the fact that anybody can build a website means that a lot of these people, I think, have gone away. So there I went back to my first point. I can delete that note. Now, things have been happening in web development. Where do I go with this? So, once upon a time, there was a desktop, and everyone had desktops. And often these desktops had very small screens. And those screens were getting bigger, and 1080p was not quite a thing yet. And that was what we built our websites for. And then people came out with the devices. We had laptops, and desktops were not the only thing visiting your website. Now phones were visiting your website. And smartphones, and then tablets were visiting your website. But what do? Remember the age when you hit a website, you would get redirected to a Mobi version of the site? Yeah, it still happens. Oh, so annoying. Because usually that mobile version is like a completely separate website. And a lot of the same content that you want, you can't get to. So web developers realized that things were wrong. They needed to fix them. So there was this huge push for mobile first. Mobile first, mobile first, mobile first, mobile first. I think it was a reaction to the fact that you didn't have just desktops. I think if you're going to do it, we got to do it this other way. If we're going to handle this, we've got to handle this another way. And there's a beauty to it because, yeah, if you're going to put it on a small screen, you have to be able to think it down and think small. I personally have some problems with this method. Because here's the thing with this method. If you're mobile first and your thinking is all around how do I get all of the information that I want my visitor to see into just a few buttons that they can click on their phone, what happens when someone lands on your website from a laptop? A lot of people have laptops at home. It may be 40% of your visitors. It may be 20% of your visitors. For some websites, it's 10% of your visitors. But if you come to a website from a larger screen, you have the power to get things done, unless the web developer built a mobile-only site. You see, I think this is what has started to happen, is that out of the mobile-first movement, you started to have a mobile-only sort of thinking. And there is. There's even in this mobile, there's this idea. The first thing is I need to build the website. I build it for mobile because it's the easiest layout. I build it for mobile. It's done. And then I'm done. Here's the problem. I think we're missing the power of what you're trying to accomplish. Now, if you just take basic existing content and you're going to put it into a template, then yes, actually, I'll admit, mobile first makes sense. You already have the content. You already know how what you're going to do with it. Mobile first is easy because mobile, you get your order right, and then tablet, you go up to tablet and you add some complexity, and then you go up to desktop and you add some more complexity into your layout and you're done. But if you're really designing a website that has actual depth to its content, real content and real meaning, and you want it to be useful, I genuinely believe that mobile first is the wrong way to think about it, especially in the early stages of development. When you're talking about a website, what you're talking about is a more than just information, but a way of interacting with information. You should be thinking of it as a web application in the world today, anyway, in the internet today. It basically should be an application, a web application. So it should have elements to it. It should have some depth to it. I'm a fan of a tablet-first design philosophy where your design begins with the tablet size. The thinking begins with the tablet size. When you lay out your website and you want to design it, you don't have your content identified necessarily all, you know, you're using lorem ipsum. You do want to have your big content ideas when you start to design and lay things out. You want to have your categories. You want to have your main menu sort of at least figured out what it might start to look like. And then you can start to do something in tablet. Because I think what happens then is you have already a mindset of what your real goal is for the website. So that when you go to desktop and you go to design for desktop, you've already thought about how to really give some depth, and now you're just adding a little bit more depth. When you go to mobile, you're just simplifying the view a little bit. But as far as design, starting with a tablet, I think makes more sense. That tablet layout makes more sense. That's something that's original to me. I haven't heard anybody say this. I think it needs to be out there. I think we need a tablet-first movement, so jump on the train with me. Or if you have heard of anybody who has used a tablet-first movement paradigm, the way of thinking, let me know. I would love to hear about it. That would be tremendous. I would love to see that happen to the web development community. All right. There's something else, though, that bothers me about web today. First of all, what bothers me about the mobile first is that you hit a website and you often see the bars cross. And that's okay, but it's really not an ideal view. You don't really get a lot out of it. The other thing that really bothers me about web development today is that we have tools to use things in 3D. We can do animations, we can do 3D things, we can interact with 3D space. We have the tools to do it. There are amazing things that could be done by adding real dimension to your website, dimension, depth, in 3D space. And we have the tools to do it, and nobody's doing it. It bothers me a little bit. I understand that building that would be hard. And I also understand I'm not a full-time web developer, so there's that. I'm not going to have the time. Maybe on a personal project I could do it. But for a personal project, I'm going to use the tools, the same tools everybody else is. I don't know. It's possible. Now, with the things I've been doing with Blender, it might become easier to export some of that to OpenGL things like that, WebGL, and start to really push some of that design into my web stuff, because I think it's a big missing point. We have now this technology and we're not using it. Web pages are still static pages that are equivalent of fancy fax machines. It's like, what's the point of that? Why am I visiting a website that I could get on a fax machine? So I think that really creating depth and dimension to a website involves more than just putting content on a page. You have to meaningfully think about how is an end user going to interact with that content. And that's a UX thing, which I'm not an expert at by any stretch of the imagination. But like all things in the world, I think that there are parts of web development that are broken. But it's a really fascinating world because, again, going back to the very beginning, the first thing that I said about it, web development really is an open, it could be anything that you make it. It is what you make it. It's a blank slate. What do you want to do in the world? You could do it on the web. You can be the biggest, the strongest. You could be the smartest, the most beautiful. Whatever it is that you want can be created on the web because it's just a powerful open canvas to developing whatever it is that you want to develop. Very cool stuff. Lots to think about. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Pilgrim Show. And this is episode number 21 here on the Freedomizer Radio. Freedomizerradio.com, GuruPilgrim.com. Check them both out. There's so much more coming up in the next few weeks, and I can't wait to share it all with you. Please visit freedomizerradio.com and see what other shows are out there. There's a lot of great stuff. Something coming up here, we have Keys to the Kingdom in 15 minutes. So stay tuned to Freedomizer Radio if you want to join and jump in on that. Thank you so much for being a part of the show today. And that did not work. I didn't click the button.